and we do some Tzadi Zayin, which is, I said it would just be a one-day thing. I don't know if we're going to get to everything, obviously, in Simen Tzadi Zayin. I mean, I'm pretty sure we won't get to everything in Simen Tzadi Zayin. But one thing to keep in mind when we do Simen Tzadi Zayin is that, the first part is about milchig bread, or fleishig bread, and then it moves on to discuss other things as well, meaning kashrus of an oven, sort of. We're not going to get into that right now. I mean, there are going to be other opportunities where we'll be able to discuss kashrus of an oven and how to keep one oven from milchig and fleishig and what to do about things of that nature. That's not going to be today's topic. Today's topic is going to be purely about the inyan of milchig and fleishig bread. So let's go through this inyan. The sugya is not a chulin sugya. It's a psachim sugya. And the reason it comes up in psachim is because that's where we have a concept of matzah ashiva, that you incorporate other ingredients other than flour and water into the matzah. So that's an issue, because the matzah is supposed to be lechem oni, so matzah ashiva is a problem. So we talk about putting chalav into the matzah, which essentially has turned the matzah into dairy bread. So you have that separate issue. So the Gemara quotes a brisa in Pesachim Lam Vavam and Aleph, Ein lashin ha'isa b'chalav v'im lash kala pasas urim neher galaveira, that you're not allowed to knead the dough with milk, and if you do, the whole bread's going to be also because of hergel aveira. And Rashi explains that the reason you're not allowed to do it is shelo yochal basarima, that you might come to eat meat with the dairy bread. Says Xavier, we just don't have any dairy bread, and then you won't come to eat meat with dairy bread. But the Gemara says there is a major heter, and that heter is iavdinu ke'en tura shari, that if you bake the bread ke'en tura, like the eye of an ox, then the bread is mutter. So two explanations in Rishonim, just what ke'en tura means in the first place. Rashi writes that ke'en tura is to be translated literally ka'ayin shel shor, like the eye of a bull, of an ox. And the point that the Gemara is trying to make is that if the bread is made in very tiny portions, like a bullseye, right? That's why apparently a bull has a small eye, that's why they call it a bullseye, right? That the point is, the Gemara is using that expression. A bullseye is very small, so it's saying, make a very tiny portion, and then that's okay. And Rashi says that, he explains, why is that logical? Because the whole concern is that you're not going to realize that the bread is milchig, and you can make yourself a pastrami sandwich on that bread. Well, you're only not going to know it's milchig if it's been a while since you baked the bread. But if you made such a small amount of it, you'll have it quickly in one sitting, and that's it, it's going to be gone. So in that, right after baking it, of course you're going to remember. How small is small? So the Mechaber over here in Si'if Aleph says that it has to be small enough to be eaten in one sitting, that you're going to sit down, one meal, you'll eat the whole thing. However, the Ramah is more makel. The Ramah seems to say that small enough that you'll eat in one day. Because the Ramah talks about a minug that people had, that they would make milchig bread for Shavuos, and they would make fleishig bread for Shabbos. People ask, I remember I was getting a lot of shaylas, one of the restaurants that used to be under Gur Hashkacha in the Five Towns used to sell challah with meat in it. And they said, how does the Hashkacha allow challah with meat in it? Because it used to be under Gur Hashkacha, so how do they allow challah with meat in it? So it's a beferish Ramah that the challah could be a fleishig challah anyway, if it's dafka made for Shabbos and it's supposed to be eaten entirely on Shabbos. So in fact, if you look in the Bach, he sounds this way too, because he explains the Shari Dura allows baking fleishig bread for Shabbos, and he writes v'tam dvarav kivon shelo nishar mehem liachar Shabbos ein lochu shami yavo liachum b'chalav. Because that since you're not going to have anything left after Shabbos, you don't have to worry about anything, because no one's eating milchig on Shabbos. Everyone's eating fleishig on Shabbos. So as long as you're only using it that day, on a day that's very clearly a fleishig day, so you have nothing to worry about. It is somewhat curious that the Ramah says, based on that, that the Ramah says that Shavuos, it's okay to have milchig bread, because it's true, you'll have a milchig meal on Shavuos, but you'll also have a fleishig meal on Shavuos, at least according to the Ramah, in terms of why it is that we have milchigs on Shavuos, that it would seem that it does not exempt one from having fleishigs as well on Shavuos. But anyway, be that as it may, it seems that the Ramah holds that it's enough bread to last you for the entire day. the Aruch HaShulchan points out, what do you mean last you for the entire day? Who's you? So the Aruch HaShulchan says, if you have a large family, so enough to last your entire family for the entire day. So depending on the size of your family, what constitutes a small portion is subjective. It's not that there's a particular shear and that, you know, any more than that is necessarily problematic. It really depends on the situation. Anyway, all that is Rashi. Ke'ein Tura means small portion. Comes along the Rambam, Hilchos Machlokes Tzuras, Perek Tes, Halacha Chaf Beis. Ke'ein Tura means that Shina B'Tzura Sapas, Ad Shetia Nikeres, Kedei Shlo Yochel Ba'lo Basav Lachalav. The bread looks strange. It has to look different, where people are going to ask about this. What is it? You know, sometimes a new dish is brought out, and you're like, wait, before I eat this, what is this? You know? Oh, it's the brains mixed with the, you know, like, okay, you know, like, I need to know what this is, you know, you call it something nice, but, I'd like to know what this is that I'm about to eat. So if someone is going to look at the bread and say, well, what's this? This doesn't look like bread. This looks like something else. So then you'll be able to, if you're able to prompt the question, then you know that you're going to have an educated consumer who's eating it. So you'll be able to tell them, oh, it's milchig bread. It's a fancy kind of bread that's milchig. So then they're not going to come to eat it with pastrami or whatever. There is a machlokas aposkim, how unusual it has to be. In Darkei Tshuva and Sifkat Din Yates, he points out that most of the poskim do not really directly discuss this issue. But, he says, if you look at the Chachmas Adam seems to indicate that it has to be different enough that even those who are from out of town, from a different country, a different city, should notice that this is unusual and should ask questions about it. Meaning, if you were to go to Italy and see Italian bread, you wouldn't say, well, what's this? This is so strange. It's shaped a little different. Italian bread is shaped a little different than, you know, a regular loaf of rye or whatever that you'll find in America. But it's not like so unusual. It's not weird. So that would not qualify, says the Chachmas Adam. It would have to be something that even someone who's not from here and is not accustomed to the kind of bread that you serve here would still say, this looks strange. Beis Yosef quotes a Rashba in the Taras Abayis, who also says that it has to be different enough that Shaharoa Yodea Shaloshinu Tsuraso Elu Lehekra Bialma V'yishal V'yomelo. That when you see it, you should realize that this was done purposely, differently purposely. That they dafka made it different on purpose. That is Shita number one. However, the Chavos Das and the Biurim in Sifkat and Gimel writes, Ubim Shina Hapas the Mutter, Ein Mutter Rak Bebeso. Avalasos hapas meruba limkor b'shok oser da'orchim lo yakiru b'shinoi v'af al smach ha'hoda'a oser d'cheshina shami yishkach milodiyah k'mod d'cheshina k'sheina oser shinoi shami yishkach v'yoch v'basa. So if you're baking for private use, it just has to be a different shape than the rest of the bread in your house. It does not have to be as unusual a shape as the Chachmas Adam suggests, because there's nothing that's going to be unusual enough that's really going to that's going to achieve that effect. The Chavos Das seems to be saying that this whole heter is only within your home, so it only has to be different than whatever you normally do in your home. The whole heter is not going to apply if you're presenting this bread to the public to be mocher bashuk. So that meaning in principle they're saying the same thing, that the bread needs to prompt a conversation. The whole point is that someone, before they eat this bread, has to be educated about it. And you can't rely on your memory I'll remember to tell somebody, I'll remember to warn somebody. No. It has to be that someone's going to look at this and ask, and therefore you can rely that you're going to tell them. It's just that Darkei Tshuva quotes from Chachmas Adam that is possible even with people who aren't accustomed to your bread and don't know what it's supposed to look like, if it's really strange, if you cut it in a really strange way. Whereas Chavos Das doesn't think that there's such a thing, that you could do it in such a weird way, and therefore only within your house will people ever notice a difference. This heter of doing it in an unusual shape is used, or is required actually, in Eretz Yisrael. There's a very popular food in Israel called a bereka. But berekas come in two types. There are potato berekas and there are cheese berekas. Now, potato berekas, sometimes they'll sprinkle gravy over it or something like that. You know, tafshil shel basar, sometimes actual basar. over a potato bereka, but not over a cheese bereka. How would you ever tell the difference? It's just some flaky dough over something that's inside of it. Until you eat it, you would never know. And sometimes, even when you eat it, sometimes if it's not particularly good, the cheese tastes like potato, the potato tastes like cheese. So you're not sure. Like if you know someone takes a blintz and says, "Oh, what kind of blintz is this?" So then it's probably not worth it. But in Israel, it's universally accepted. Potato berekas are square and cheese berekas are triangles. That's what they do, universally accepted. All the hashgachas require it. And that's based on this this idea. So if cheese berekas would also be baked square-shaped, then you'd have this concern. It's based on this idea, but it's not actually halachically required based on this idea, because this is dafka din and bread. It does not seem to apply to other normally parva foods. Right, it's dafka gzeira that was made by bread. But I saw this explanation, the Tshuvas V'darashta V'chakarta, Chelekei Yerodeya Simin Lamed Gimel, Rabbi Grossman. Anyway, so Shulchan Aruch Paskins and Sif Aleph, right? Shulchan Aruch Paskins, like both Rashi and the Rambam, that bread that was baked with milk or meat is usher to eat, even by itself, you're not even allowed to eat it without something, unless it was made either in small quantities or in a strange shape, a very unique shape. And in fact, Rama points out, like we said, that's why they used to bake dairy breads on Shavuos, because it was a small quantity, or meat breads on Shabbos, because a small quantity would only last for that day. Now, in Pischei Tshuva and Sifkat and Beis, he quotes a Prima Gadim, Shekasav, D'yesh la'ayin im losh pas im chalav, b'shogeg sholo yada sheze aser. A lot of people don't know this iser. It's a Ferish Halach and Shekhar, it's a Ferish Gemara. A lot of people are totally unaware of this iser. Every once in a while, someone they'll buy a bread machine, or they'll get, people like to pick up new hobbies, especially with Corona. So now everyone has their own sourdough at home. I know that was like a big craze that was going on. People are feeding their sourdoughs, or whatever, and they come up with all sorts of bread recipes. So a lot of people don't know. They don't know that you're not allowed to make a milchik bread. So he says, let's say a person did it. They put some milk in their bread because they didn't know. Oh, nafal b'shogeg chalav, mi asar olo kantzuki im hecha sha'avar b'mezi. It's a strange suffix, no? He said, what's the suffix? If you did it, Bishalgeg doesn't become Asr. Why on earth wouldn't it be Asr? You know, I'll have milk and bread because you might come to eat it with pleasure. Because maybe it's a knas. So we only make a knas when a person does something amazing. But we're not going to be Kones. Shogeg got to amazing. I don't even understand the Hava Amina. Why would you think it's a knas? A knas means you've done something wrong and therefore we're punishing you. Over here, it's preventative. This is like a classic gzeira, not knas. This is a gzeira, it's not a knas. So what do you mean a knas? So he says the pashtus is that it would still be a problem, which I would think it would be. In the Hagos Zer Zahav, on the Prima Gadim, he explains that the reason why dairy bread is forbidden is not based on knas, but a gezeira, exactly like we said. So it doesn't make sense to differentiate between whether you baked it b'shogeg or b'mezid. Either way, it's a chashash that you'll come to eat it with meat. So it doesn't seem to really that should really make a difference. There was a case in the OU a while back that there was a company that was making milchig bread wanted to make milchig bread, and they said they were going to make it in an unusual shape. So Rabbi Gersten brought in the pictures of the prototypes to Rabbi Schechter and Rabbi Belsky to look at, see if it's a weird enough shape that it would that it would meet the qualifications. So neither Rabbi Schechter nor Rabbi Belsky thought that it was different enough, that it was strange enough. So the company came back and said, okay, so you won't give hashgacha, but can you produce a letter that all of the ingredients used in this bread are kosher? You know, signed by the OU. Right? That at least all the ingredients are kosher. So obviously they're not going to do that. As Rabbi Gersten said, technically we could write such a letter about a cheeseburger too, that all of the ingredients are kosher. But that's the issue. You can't write such a letter. So the company said, if you don't write such a letter, we're leaving the OU. So they said, okay, good riddance. And they didn't leave the OU. They ended up saying, does Rama mean one day? He mentioned Shavuos, which is two. Also says Vlachein. Sounds like he's coming off of Pesach and Mechaber, not arguing. Could it be He's saying that on Shabbos Shavuos there's a hecker because all the suddas are the same. Yeah, it could be that that's what he's saying, as opposed to the rest of the week, where each suda is separate and would agree to the mechaber. Meaning, yeah, I hear that. Meaning that the mechaber is saying that each and every day there's a concern that you might eat it with the opposite gender food, right? That you make a milchik bread, you might eat a fleshik, you make a fleshik bread, you might eat a milchik. But on Shabbos, there's no concern, because especially when you look at the Lashon of the Shari Dura that's quoted in the Bach, is that Ein Lecha Ani Shabbi Yisrael, that doesn't eat basar on Shabbos. Everybody has fleishig on Shabbos, so no one's going to ever be milchig on Shabbos. It's still difficult to understand. No one's ever milchig on Shabbos. Shalosh Shudas, you don't ever have milchig Shalosh Shudas. People are milchig Shalosh Shudas all the time. You know, you're not going to have... and Shavuos especially, especially if most of us can assume that you're supposed to eat basar also. And that's the whole kunz, is to eat chalav in somewhat of close proximity to basar and knowing how to handle it. And knowing how to separate between the two. So it could be that's what he's saying. It's still a little bit confusing. Now, there is one basic chakira in this entire sugya, and all of the... Once you know the basic chakira, you look around on the page in Shulchan Aruch, and you see all the nosei kelim, and you could sort of plug in what each one holds in the basic chakira. Rav Soloveitchik was quoted as having suggested that there are two ways to look at the issur of milchik bread. That either... the nature of the takana was, the nature of the gzeira was, that it was just that, it was a gzeira, lest you come to violate an isser. So as long as you manage to avoid any concern that you'll violate an isser, then you're okay. The whole thing just remains as an isser on the gavra, lest he violate the isser. So whatever you do, figure out a way where there's not going to be such a concern. Or the other way to look at it is, that's why they made the gzeira. But once they made the gzeira, it became a cheftz of machalos asuros. That Chazal were masakin that milchik bread is machalos asuros. And it's I don't care if you can figure out ways around it and ways to avoid the iser. Bottom line is they were in masakin, they were gozer that milchik bread is a cheftz of machalos asuros. This may play a role in a number of the discussions surrounding milchik bread. For example, there is a sefer Atzei Ola I saw quoted in a sefer called Ohel Yaakov, which is probably a guy like my age in Yerushalayim who writes very nice halachas svarim collecting from all the contemporary poskim. So he writes that if you mix milk in your dough, you can add more flour and water so that the milk will be batel b'shishin. So even though in mevatel nisur l'chachila, yeah, but that's when there's actual iser. But if milk falls into a meat soup and there isn't shishim, so then you can't add more meat in order to be mevatel the milk, because that's actual iser. But the milk in the dough is not iser. It's just that it's a gezeira that you're going to come to eat with flesh. So there are two ways to solve that. You could throw it out, and then you won't come to eat it, or you can make it not milchig anymore. Make sure that it's batel, and then you don't have to worry that you'll come to eat it with flesh. And in Tshuvas Marit, he goes one step further. He says that you're even allowed to dafka pour a few drops of milk into your dough mixture, knowing that it's going to be batel b'shishim, because there's no issur of being mevatel a gzeira, as long as the gzeira is not going to apply. The Nachlas Tzvi is authored by Pesachei Tshuva, right? It's his actual sefer. Pesachei Tshuva is just when he quotes others. In Yardei Asim Tzadi Zayin over here, says that you could distinguish between milk poured into chicken soup and milk poured into dough. When enough milk is poured into chicken soup, the soup automatically becomes not kosher. When you make a dairy dough, the dough is still going to be kosher as long as you shape it properly, or weirdly, as long as you cut it up into tiny pieces. So you can't refer to the dough as being mevatel iser, because there are two ways to fix it that are mefurish in the... Well, what's mefurish in the Gemara came to Rav, but we pass in like both Shittas and Rishonim that there are two ways to easily fix it. And it's true, the Lashon is Ein... The Lashon of the Gemara is Ein Lashin Es Ha'isa, that you're not allowed to knead the dough, but of course you're allowed to knead the dough with Chalav. It can't be Dafka, because you are allowed to knead it with Chalav as long as you cut it into small portions, or as long as you then shape it in a very unusual way. So it's hard to call that being mevatel iser l'chachila. Gillian Marshar of Shlomo Eger says, "Afilu liten betocho davar muat aser That it's also to be mevatel milk in dough. He says one thing that they used to do with wine is they used to put a little bit of milk in the wine to give it a clearer complexion or something, would make the wine look better. So he says, same iser. There are two chiddushim over here. Chiddush number one is that we apply in mevatel nisul to milk and bread, that it's called being mevatel iser. Chiddush number two is that he applies it to wine. There is no beferish gemara that says you're not allowed to have milk and wine or flesh and wine. But the assumption is that if wine is chamar medina, wine is what you drink at every meal, and bread is what you eat at every meal, alechem vado yichya adam, so mistama, the same gzera that applies to bread, is going to apply to wine, and you shouldn't have milchig wine, you shouldn't have fleishig wine. Well, the Yad Avram writes, be'emes lo nias daiti nir, lo nirakim, demashkos v'atzem v'tzedek, he says that it should be no different than any other iser that you're being mevatel. He says, shnohu, shnohu, it's very different. Over here it's purely a siyag. Even if you do eat the milchig bread, you didn't violate pasul b'chol unless you ate it with fleishigs. So he thought that that's not really an equivalent. Now, in Valensilchi is very important because let's say a company wants to make a bread that has a milchig ingredient, but it's going to be batel, and they come to the Ashkacha agency and they want you to give Ashkacha. So can you give Ashkacha to such a thing? So if you hold it, so there are two things. First, you have to discuss, is it in Valensilchi, right? I mean, do we apply in Valensilchi to milchig bread? And second, is giving Ashkacha to a company the same as being Mevatel Isser Chachila? Meaning, can you give Ashkacha to a company that's going to be Mevatel an actual Isser? Or do you say, no, that's Kilo, I'm being Mevatel Isser Chachila? So Badei HaShulchan writes that certifying a product as kosher is the equivalent of a Lechachila situation, and therefore you cannot provide kosher certification when non-kosher foods are purposely being Batel, they're purposely being Mevatel it, in that mixture. And that's what I heard from Shechter also, that's clearly the standard practice in Kali. We don't allow like non-kosher ingredients to come into a factory. Oh, don't worry, they'll be mevatelit. You know, even if we trust that they're going to be mevatel, that's a violation of mevatelus l'chachila. When you give hashkacha, you're saying that there are no shailas over here and that we kept any non-kosher ingredients out of here. Rav Sabalovsky suggested, at least, that maybe giving hashkacha is not considered being mevatel the issue yourself. The company has their product. They're asking for kosher certification. They're not asking you what their product should be. So their product is going to be their product. It might be milk, it might be flesh, it might be par, it might be treif, right? But it's their product. And they're asking for kosher certification. You're not telling them what their product is supposed to be. If you're informing them what their product is supposed to be, and they're your shaliach in being mevatel, yes, okay, then I hear that it's in mevatel l'chachila. That's a svara Rabbi Sabalovsky suggested. It's not always the reality. Very often, a company is willing to change the actual ingredients in order to be able to appeal to the kosher consumer. The kosher market is a very big market already. So, every once in a while, when the Jewish people lose something really, really important and valuable to them, like the part of status of Stella Dora cookies or the kashrus of Dunkaroos, so they're always, public service organizations that use a lot of time and effort and social media campaigns to get thousands and thousands of Jews to sign on petitions about, how you're going to ruin Shabbos parties forever, and you're going to... So, and you know what? And companies listen. This is, it's like I quoted from Noach Dier before, that's what politics is for. You're supposed to help the Jewish people. Ridiculous. But they do. Sometimes they'll change. Dunkaroos are kosher. They weren't supposed to be, but they're kosher. Stella Dora cookies are part of. Why? Because of us. I mean, present company excluded, but because of our chevra that was marish elamois over these important issues.
Yeah. that it's sad to say that milchus bread is a chetzah shabbosir. So, like, you have to sort of lab dafka, or at least the fact that you might give satire.
Yeah, yeah. To say that it's posh chetzah, meaning that it's, you know, that it's the way we would normally understand the chefta of machalos asuros, it's impossible to say that because the Gemara clearly says keturah is mutter. So you have to say that when they were misaking it, they were misaking it as a chefta shalisur. But in a chinami, when it's keturah, they were not misaking to begin with. But when they were gozer as a chefta shalisur. The Chachmas Adam in Klal Nun and the Aruch HaShulchan in Simas HaDizai in Siv Ches say that under certain circumstances you could divide your dairy bread into a lot of small pieces and distribute the pieces to different families. So even though the bread was originally usser, you can kasher it by cutting it up into small pieces, ke'ein tura. In fact, if you look in the Plesi, he quotes from his maternal grandfather. He says, v'shamati shazikni avi'imi hagona maforsam marenu arav leib tzuntz zichrono levracha Hora bepas shazava tacht of chalav, that you had a bread that some milk had flowed underneath the bread, shekulo aser, vitziva lechalkom lebatim lekol bal bayis kikarecha. So he said, I have an idea. Just start dividing it up and give everyone one loaf throughout the whole city. Vimkein, maishna me'ilu afatchila davrim at demutru, adin b'yesh b'kol bayis rak davrim muat, this week akera. Just like if you just bake a little tiny bit for yourself, that's mutter. If you bake a whole bunch and then make sure that everyone only gets a tiny bit, that's mutter. Then yesh makom od si d'lahakel kedai makom od tzad lahakel kedai l'smuchalav. He says if there's another tzad lahakel, I'd rely on my zeidah. Meaning, he's at a place he's not perfectly comfortable with the zeidah's kula, but he says if you have another sniff lahakel, so then I'd be somich on that. So that's what he quotes. So it would seem that. Similarly, you should be able to add a simen after the bread was baked, because dairy bread is usur unless you come to eat it with meat. But by adding a simen of some sort on it, it's not going to be a concern anymore. There's an interesting Ben Ish Chai in Parsha Shalach in Shana Beis Os Yud Zayin is mechadish that dairy bread can be sold in small quantities, even if it was baked in large quantities, if it has a very strong buttery smell to it. Because the smell itself is a simen also. So you sort of have both. It's going, John is calling you. So I don't know if it comes through on the, does it stop the Zoom? Someone just taught me there's a do not disturb mode. I never knew that it existed, but there's such a mode on the phone. Okay,
yeah, we're back.
So it's okay. Okay. So you have both. Meaning, what was the place you're looking for? Another sniff lahakel. So here's your other sniff lahakel. No pun intended. If you sniff it and it smells like butter, that's your sniff lahakel. Both of these issues, both of these machlokas, are Salvech pointed out. Are arguing about that same lamdas, meaning is it a cheftz of machil sasurus, is it just a cheshash that you might come to eat it with fleshing? Chavz das is conceptually identical to the Gilyan Marsha and the Tzemach Tzedek, that the nature of the isur is to make dairy bread as an isur cheftz of machil sasurus, same way that milk and chicken is inherently asur, and therefore ein mevatlin isur chachila, and you can't kasher it afterwards because it's a cheftz of machil sasurus. Whereas Chachmas Adam and the Nachlas Tzvi view it as a gezeira. So in Isra on the Gavra, don't put yourself in a situation where you might come to violate Basa B'chalav. So you could make it permissible by being mevatalit or by fixing it later. So that's why Chachmas Adam holds that there's a Safik Shishim Keneged Achalav, you can rely on Ti'imas Yisrael. If it were real Machalas Asuros, you couldn't rely on Ti'imas Yisrael. Rely on Ti'imas Yisrael, what does that mean? Have a Jew taste it and say, see if he could taste any milchik in it. And if he does, things go, he just ate treif. Right? If he could taste milchik in it. Yeah, Savik Drabar Lukula. The whole thing is Savik Drabar, Savik Drabar Lukula. That's what it sounds like. In my friend Rabbi Asher Fruchter's Sefer, in Peres Habayis, he says that the reason we allow Timas Yisrael, and we would never allow it by Shari Surim, is that Savik Drabanu Lakula, Shari Bisurim Drabanu Bialma, the reason we don't say by Savik Shishin that it's Savik Drabanu Lakula and that you could just taste it is because it's a Chazik Isura, that there was definitely a Shem Isra there, you just don't know how much of it. So it's a Chazik Isura, you're not going to rely on Savik Drabanu Lakula and say, oh, a little bit of Chaz or Shmelz fell into this, I don't know how much. Taste it and see if you can, you know, if it's a Savik, you wouldn't do that. Because it's chazik yisura, it's chazik shmalt, you just don't know if it's been batal or not. But over here, everything is mut, so there's no chazik yisura, so mele, you might be able to rely on savik drabban lakula. What if you bought dairy bread and you used it in your kosher kelim? Do the kelim need to be kashered? It might also be subject to this issue, that if it's a chefs of machal asasuros, and that's the nature of the takana, so then you trafe up your kelim. But if it's only in isur gavra that you'll come to eat it with meat, so then you wouldn't have to kasher your kelim. Not talking about using flesh kelim, in milcha kelim, but it's also to have dairy bread. It's similar to the machlokas Rishonim you have. We're supposed to learn machalei Yakum this year at the end of the year, right? So similarly, you have a machlokas Rishonim that appears on the page in Shulchan Aruch about Bishul Akum, right? Where the Bishul Akum trafes up the kelim as well. Shulchan Aruch quotes two days by Bishul Akum. Sounds like the Iker is like the sheet of that. Anyone know this? Sounds from Shulchan Aruch, the Iker is like the Shita that it does trafe up the kelim. The reason why many, many rabbis say that it doesn't is because there are a million other sniffim lahakel. Yeah, it's based on Shal Yisrael and whatever. They have other, maybe it's not really all Shulchan Aruch, whatever they, you know, they just make noodles or whatever. You know, so there are always other sniffim lahakel that people are mitzarif, that some people are mitzarif, some are not. Now, the Rav Soloveitchik had a huge kula that was not widely accepted. I mean, it was accepted at some point, is now no longer accepted, bechlal, that he thought that the simin on the bread, the shinui on the bread, does not have to be on the bread itself. That you could even put it on the packaging. And therefore, if the package says dairy, that's good enough. You don't need to do anything more. So you could have milk and bread and just write dairy on the package. The Chavis Das says not only can't you do that, you can't even add the simen after the bread was baked. Once it's been baked, that's it. It's done. You can't kasher it again. In the Chuvas Evan Yisrael, he explains that the Chazal's Isser was on the actual act of kneading the dough. Ein lashin, you're not allowed to knead it. Chazal also said that if you have intention to bake small amounts or to make it into a distinct shape, then such a kneading is mutter. Meaning, even though you're not allowed to knead dairy bread, if you do it with the intention of later making smaller loaves or making it into a distinct shape, then it's going to be mutter. So if you knead the bread with the intention to later place a sticker on the bread, then maybe that also would work, because that's the same as putting it into a different shape. So it could be, says the Evan Yisrael, that even the Chavis Das holds that once the bread is created by Isser, it can't be fixed, but it's only called created by Isser if you never had Das to fix it. But if while you were kneading it, you already had Das to fix it, that's before Shem the Gemara that's mutter. Ke'ein Tura is mutter. So apparently you're allowed to, the Isser is Ein Lashin, you're right, says that's what the Chavis Das Aldiyak is, the Isser is Ein Lashin, and therefore, once you get past baking it, forget it, you can't fix it anymore. But maybe that's only if you didn't intend to fix it. But if at the Shas Lisha you're already intending to fix it, then it would be okay. And that's probably what Rav Soloveitchik's kula was. The story they tell within the kashrus industry is that it was an accepted kula by some reliable kashrus organizations, and then there were some major Rosh Yeshiva, different rumors about who it was, who during Bein HaSedarim came home to have lunch, and his wife made him a salami sandwich or something, and then they discovered that the bread was milchik. They couldn't believe it. Who ever heard of milchik bread? So they shouldn't even check the package to see if it was dairy bread or not. So they said, that's an avla, afil behemtim shel tzadikim shouldn't be nichshol v'machal asasura. So they, you know, gadol, you know, from the gadolei Rosh Yeshiva, so they did away with this heter. What if, you know, the Rama said you can make a dairy bread for one day, or for one su'uda. Let's say you made enough for one suda, but you didn't finish it. You thought it would be only for one suda, but then you have leftovers. So do you have to throw it out because now it's not for one suda anymore? So in the Chuvus Vidrashta V'Chakarta, Rav Grossman, Chelik Hei Yerdeya Simen Hei through Zayin, he says that when there is a part of bread left over from a fleishig meal, which we learned in Simon Peites, has a din of dairy, right? Because it was on the fleishig table. Chazal did not ask for using the remaining slices on their own, because you'll ask, where did this slice of bread come from? And once you ask, you'll be informed that it came from a fleishig meal. So l'chori, you can say the same thing over here. If there are leftover slices of milchig bread, it's going to be mutter, because people are not used to being served milchig, I mean slices of bread. If you're being served slices, you're not being served a loaf. Wait a second, this looks like it's leftovers. Leftovers from what? And that itself serves as a hecker. Then there are questions, you know, people discuss, what about a vegetarian? Never had meat in his life. So can he have dairy bread in large amounts without a simen? So the Ohel Yaakov quotes from a number of poskim that vegetarians also can't make dairy bread because it has nothing to do with the baker himself. It's the act of kneading and baking, and someone else might come to eat it. Or in Marsham in the Chuvin, Chelek Zayin Siman Ayin Vav talks about, can you make milchig bread during the 9 days? You know, you're not going to eat meat during the 9 days unless you do. You know, unless someone makes a siyum or whatever. There's always, there's always reasons that that it still might be a problem. The most famous controversy about milchig bread is the famous Thomas's English muffins controversy. That was the only dairy bread that the OU gave hashgacha to, and I think still does. And the svara to be makil was a few things. First of all, it's small quantities. Each loaf is very small, and that's a very shvera kula in this context. On his diet, right? Why is that a shvera kula? You buy eight at a time, and you could, they have preservatives. Those things can last, you know. They could be there from the year of the flood. They put this, especially put them in the freezer. Like it's not something. It's very likely to forget over time. Another tzad lahakel was new. What else? What's the other tzad lahakel? It's shaped. It's different. You know, it's a muffin. It's not bread. Someone will say, "What's this?" So they'll say, "Oh, no, it's a breakfast muffin." Oh, breakfast muffin. Breakfast foods are milchids. Except when they're not, right? Meaning, if you look at the, I don't know if Thomas's English Muffins has commercials, but I would bet if they did, they would show two sizzling strips of bacon or something on the English Muffin. I mean, by Jews, we have milchigs for breakfast. I don't know. If you go to the non-kosher Dunkin' Donuts, they have. I don't know what kind of meat it is, but they have some sort of meat products. They have sausages and things like that for breakfast. Sounds disgusting, but that's what they do. So I don't know, is that necessarily a shinui that someone's going to ask about? And especially once the Frum brands were not happy with the Chassida, the Heimish Hashkachas, were not happy with the OU about this. So a lot of the Frum brands started making English muffins without any dairy in it. So now it's a different surah, but it's a surah that's not so different from other breads that look exactly the same and don't have milchig in it. So it's hard to say that it's a different surah. The real heter is that it's batal b'shishim. So they're relying on those that say you're allowed to be mevatel yisur chachila in combination with the fact that they're not even being mevatel yisur, the company is being mevatel yisur, in combination with the snifla hakel that it's a different surah and the snifla hakel that it's a small quantity. So that's what they rely on. But it is relying on something, meaning it's not so clear, meaning there are those that say that you're not allowed to be mevatel yisur. And there are those that say that, and we normally assume giving ashkach is the same as being mevatel yisur. So that's the assumption that they must be working with when they give the ashkach on the English muffins. Just a couple of other quick things over here. The Ramah goes on to say that you shouldn't bake bread in an oven together with meat, with a meat pie, like a pashtida, because we think that some of the meat juice will drip out of the pie and will hit the bread and make it fleishig. Once the bread is fleishig, it becomes aser, even if it became fleishig by accident. The Shulchan Aruch in Sif Beis then adds that if you smeared some fat on the walls of the oven and you bake bread inside, the bread is fleishig, and that's why you can't do that, because you can't make fleishig bread. And one more thing, in Pesachei Tshuva, in Sifkat and Gimel, he quotes from a Tshuvas Maharit and a Chachmas Adam, that the isser of making milchig bread only applies to bread that would normally be eaten together with meat, meaning the seuda type of bread. The Yisur does not go on the types of bread that are eaten for dessert, meaning cakes, pasabal b'kisnin, things like that. If it's a dessert food, not a meal food, so then it's not going to be included in the Yisur. So the Yisur to eat meat and dairy together is obviously much more serious, even though even that's not d'oraisa, but it's much more serious than eating one after the other. So we can make dairy cakes and danishes and things like that, because even though the cakes are served as a dessert at a fleishig meal, that's not part of the gezeira. The gezeira only includes those breads that are more likely to be eaten mamish together with meat. What else? We got some questions over here. Would it make a difference if we're dealing with the way kashrus organizations work in Europe, where they don't give a certification, they just publish lists, versus America? I think so. I think Gabe is raising a good point. You know, Rabbi Sablowski Sahara, that it's not called bittul isur lechatchila because they're doing what they're doing anyway. That's true in Europe, where you're just, or in those places in Europe where they're not actually given certification, they just tell you it's information that they're sharing, that this is kosher, this is not, this is, but the companies don't have to answer to any hashkacha ever. As opposed to over here, where they, you know, the dafka want the kosher market. And, or the seal of quality. A lot of times at the OU in particular, I know people that work at the OU told me that, you know, water companies will ask for hashkacha, and they tell them, you don't need hashkacha. It's water. It's H2O. You don't need hashkacha. And they'll say, no, but we want that stamp of quality that the OU stands for. Like, you know, it's not really what it stands for, but, like, you know, okay, if that's what they want, and you know, so that's something that's it's a business decision. David Kirsch, can we say there is a quantitative amount that would make it enough to be considered Ti'imas Yisrael, similar to Shishu? I'm not sure what you mean by that. I'm not sure what the question is. What? Before the Kiyos. Does Rama mean one day? No, we did that one already, yeah? Yeah, we did that one. Okay. Yeah, that's good for also. Yeah.
I'm not sure if you addressed this, but when we were talking before, it's last year, having bread in a meal, and then that bread flashy, and then, like, versus, then why isn't that just
Husser? Because it's not really flashy. Meaning it's a separate gzeira, that it's part of bread that happens to have been at a meat meal. So, meaning ein lashness isa means to make, you're allowed to spread cream cheese on your challah, right? But you just can't have that challah that had the cream cheese spread in it together with meat. So ein lashness isa means the bread itself, that inherently in the bread itself. So that's another hetter, by the way, with the meat challah. That the meat challah that they made at this, you know, formerly reliably kosher restaurant was that they stuck pieces of, like, pastrami in it or something. Okay, you're allowed to stick pieces of pastrami in a bread. You know, they baked in, but they weren't. I never saw one actually, but I don't think they needed pastrami in the dough. That would be. I don't think that's what they did. They just stuck it in afterwards. Okay. All right. That's it for today. Okay. Everyone have a wonderful Shabbos. Chesiv chesiv tova. And it should be a good year of learning and hatzlacha for everybody.